belted to right field. Ryan O'Hearn has a grand slam. Turn and burn O'Hearn.
And call the cops while you're at it.
That's exactly what Danny Duffy was looking for. A nice cushion and a frightening offense the Royals have. That's his first career grand slam right in his home state of Texas, deep in the heart of it.
The first of two grand slams for the Royals. John McClain was there as the Royals annihilate the Astros 12-2, the worst game of the season. The story of the game was Colin McHugh. He continues to struggle. He allowed 8 earned runs on the night.
Rough start again tonight. Put our guys behind the eight ball, and I expect more out of myself. I know the staff and the team expects more out of me, and it's a matter of just going out and delivering.
McHugh has an ERA of 12 over his last four starts. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your panic meter on Colin McHugh?
It's right there at a 7 based on everything that's happened over the last month. I'm trying like hell to hang on to my memory of where Colin McHugh has had rough stretches before in his career. And it used to be that he'd get off the slow starts. And let's see, in 2017, he gave up 4 runs in his first outing. His fifth start, he gave up 7 runs. And then he got everything back on track for the most part and ended up with a pretty respectable ERA that year. It just feels different this time. His go-to new thing was going to be the slider, and he's lost control of the slider. So if he's tweaked his game a little bit and it's a matter of getting the slider and some of the control items fixed, then I could foresee him getting things back on track. I just don't know how quickly he can do it.
All right, Seth goes with a 7. John, panic meter.
10.
10?
It's been horrible.
10.
And all those balls that were hit last night were hard.
They were.
Yeah.
They were hard and they were deep. Home run over center field. He started great in the first inning. And I told my friend Robin I was sitting with, I said, hey, he looks like he's got it back. And then he went straight down the tubes. You know, he's been awful. Peacock's been woefully inconsistent. Wade Miley has been good. So, and they're minor league pitchers. You know, Forrest Whitley's been terrible. And
Corbin Martin's been really good.
Martin's been good.
But he's so young.
Their minor league pitcher of the month is at Fayetteville in A ball. That's too low. And their hitter of the month, Jordan Alvarez, AAA. But problem with that, that's a hitter's paradise, and you have to take averages and ERAs with a grain of salt. But
Alvarez is at Round Rock, right? I mean, that's neither here nor there.
Did they move? Well, they play in the Pacific Coast League, right?
They do. Now, the deal with that is, across minor league baseball, all the stats are up this year. Like, the ball is flying around. So
just like in Major League Baseball, they're on a pace to shatter the home run record more than the steroid era, shatter strikeout record, and have the fewest singles in history based on the pace baseball's in right now.
My panic meter is at an 8.
Yeah.
So Seth goes with 7. McClain's at a 10. I'm at an 8. Maybe this is just stating the obvious, but I'd much rather have a situation where McHugh is, you know, pitching 6 innings and giving up like 4 runs on a consistent basis than 2 of these starts where he annihilates the game and the bullpen itself.
You can't be feast or famine. And a lot of us, I'm guilty of this myself. I talked my way into not being alarmed about the fact that they lost 60% of their starting pitching from last year because I wanted to believe in Peacock and McHugh. And I was dumb. I was wrong. Even if McHugh gets the ship righted, it's clear at this point that I should have been at least concerned about the loss in starting pitching.
Next headline, the Texans surprisingly brought in a punter, former Raiders and Broncos punter Marquette King, for a visit yesterday. Averaged about 44 yards a punt in 4 games last year in Denver. Is it likely, John, they sign him or not?
No. Brad Seeley, their second-year special teams coordinator, he and his coaches coached him at Oakland. And Marquette King is certainly not the kind of player that Bill O'Brien and Brian Gaynor are always talking about good teammate fitting in with the culture. He's a character. I'd love from a media standpoint to see him because he has definitely been a character. He got hurt last year in Denver. Went on IR, and then he was signed to do a talk show. Don't know what happened to that, but the guy can still kick. But he's just had is just weird. You know, most punters are be seen and not heard, and he was seen and heard.
He was I'm trying to think of, like, Pat McAfee might be the only kicker slash punter that had as big a personality as Marquette King, but Pat McAfee was always liked by his teammates. I wouldn't worry about Marquette King's personality if all he was, let's say he was like a Martellus Bennett. You know, like Martellus Bennett, a lot of coaches aren't going to like Martellus Bennett because he's colorful and he says crazy things and everything, and coaches are too grumpy for their own good. So, but that's different because Martellus Bennett was liked by his teammates. There's so many reports of people just flat out not liking Marquette King.
Yes.
And if there's one position where you can't afford to be disliked by your teammates, it's at punter. Punter! Even worse than kick, well, nah, punter's a, yeah, punter. So.
What do people think of the punters on the teams that you played on?
Let's see. We had Chad Stanley, who's an alright, a good, solid stand-up dude. We had Brian Barker. Remember Brian Barker?
Yeah.
Brian Barker's the one that in that Thanksgiving game, John, do you remember this? He used to wear, like, the old single bar face mask. He was old school. He got his nose almost completely removed from his face on Thanksgiving Day. I remember I think I was at Kylie Wong's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and I'm watching the Redskins play in the Thanksgiving game, and all of a sudden there my friend Brian Barker's nose is on his right cheekbone.
Rearranged.
It was disgusting. It was disgusting. So he was a good guy, though, too. Yeah.
I like Trevor Daniel. I really believe that Trevor Daniel had a promising rookie season, and statistically they upgraded from Shane Leckler to Trevor Daniel, despite what a lot of people may be feeling around town. And I would not sign Marquette King.
They improved in six special teams categories under Brad Seeley last year. And Trevor Daniel, he didn't have a great gross or net, but he was really good at the average per return was reduced to 7.5. And he also was in the top three in punts inside the 10.
There we go.
But he was also, he was like 27th in net punt. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't Mike, and then he shanked a couple too.
It happens.
I don't understand
Cut
why.
Him some slack.
You're excited about Trevor Daniel in the same way that, like, when you stop banging your head against the wall, it feels better.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that just not banging your head against the wall is awesome. It's that, no, you stopped having an awful situation at punter. And I'm not saying that Shane Leckler was the issue before, but
results weren't good.
John made the critical point, which was everything got better across the board. It's a combination of Brad Seeley and Brian Gain. It's Brad Seeley and Brian Gain. Rick Smith, like, it's no coincidence that formerly good special teams coordinators had bad special teams while Rick Smith was the GM. And you can almost tie it exactly to Rick Smith's tenure as GM. He flat out just didn't care. He had guys on the roster that were backups that didn't play special teams. It was really, really bad. So now you come in and you've got 1 year with Brian Gain as your GM, and you had 1 year with Brad Seeley as your coach, and everything was better across the board. I'm not going to give Trevor Daniel extreme credit for improving the punting when everything else improved.
Next headline, one of the biggest games in recent memory for the Rockets tonight. A massive opportunity to win Game 5 on the road and take a 3-2 lead against the two-time defending champion Warriors.
Most teams can't go back at them. Most teams don't have the personnel to, you know, compete with them defensively and then offensively go back at them. So that's all we're doing. Like, we know, you know, what's at stake. We know who we're playing against. We're not going to let up. Like, we're going to keep coming at you until the end of the game.
The Rockets are going to win this game tonight. That's my prediction.
Oh, yeah?
I got a good feeling about this game. I think they're going to win. Will the Rockets win this game tonight?
No
fence sitting. I want an answer.
No. The last four series in which the Warriors have played, after four games, they've been even or trailed, and they've won all of them. I think it's going to seven games, but I think the Warriors will win tonight. Rockets will win back here, and they'll be going back to the Oracle.
I don't listen to any of the previous series stats with this Golden State Warriors squad because the Rockets have blown every other team out of the water in terms of their ability to compete with the Warriors. Like, and that's what I mean. You really need to appreciate that. Nobody has come even close to doing what the Rockets have been able to do in the regular season and the playoffs over the past 13 months than the Rockets have
Correct.
Done. So I'm not factoring any Warriors mystique into it. I don't do any of that. But, like, if I have to predict the game, I'll predict the Warriors win tonight.
Okay.
It's Fair not, enough. Now game seven's a whole nother deal. I'm sticking by my prediction of the Rockets winning this in seven, which means obviously they gotta do one more.
Okay. So I say the Rockets win tonight. Seth and John say the Warriors win. By the way, game seven on Sunday would be at 2:30 Central Time. So there's going to be a quick turnaround and flight between a Game 6 and a possible game number 7.
Oh, gosh. That's 2:30. A breath of fresh air. I'll be conscious. It'll be nice. I won't be, like, using stimulants at 11 p.m. to try to stay up.
And yes, like we'll be doing tonight. All right, quick thing before we get into all the football stuff with John McClain. And we're going to try to figure out at 8:18 this morning why the Rockets should be America's team starting tonight against the Warriors. Shout out to everybody who's suffering right now with the flooding going on, with the flash floods. The rain was just downpouring last night. I'm guessing in your areas, you guys were okay.
I was okay. I just, up in Kingwood and up north of Houston, they've been, this is 3 years in a row, they've
crazy
been hammered now.
Yes.
Well, really, if you go back to, because the before Harvey, we had the, I mean, it's been 5 years in a row.
And we had Tax Day, we had Memorial Day, obviously Harvey this last night.
Sugarland was hit real hard as well as Kingwood.
That's right, that's a good point.
We'll have to see if somebody else from the Bay Area decides to make a snarky joke on social media the way Kaepernick did back a few years back.
So shout out to you guys suffering. If you're listening this morning, thank you. We'll try to get you through the morning, obviously. And we have a simulcast with our friends in San Francisco coming up at 9 o'clock. A little friendly trash talk with our guys at 95.7, the game in San Francisco. John McClain, this week is the first week where the Texans can sign players from other teams without affecting their draft picks next year, their compensatory picks. Do you expect Brian Gain to do much this week or the next month or two?
Not this week. I think they're focused on the rookies coming in, the rookie mini camp. That includes draft choices, 7 draft choices, 20 undrafted free agents, also guys who were on the practice squad, injured reserve rookies, anybody that didn't recruit a full season last year toward being vested. So there's probably going to be about 30 players over there, and they'll be there coming in Thursday night. They'll be on the practice field Friday. And so then between the OTAs then start 10 days after that. So I think he will be signing another couple of free agents. And I love the Jahil Adai signing to replace Andre Howe. The guy played more snaps than anybody on the Chargers roster the last 2 years. Hmm. And they replaced him with a second-round pick, Nasir Adderley. I've never seen a team, when they cut a player for cap purposes, put out such a glowing release. Usually they don't put out anything. And you had these great quotes from Tom Telesco and Anthony Lynn about Adai, and then he was coached in 2017 by D'Anton Lynn, who is Anthony Lynn's son, who's in his second season as a Texans coach. So here's a guy that was a team leader, well-respected, and he's coming in here to replace Andre Al. I think that's a really good move.
Okay, so you like that move.
I like that move a lot.
John, I'm surprised they have not signed a more prominent running back or wide receiver. It looks like right now, and again, it's May 8th, so they can bring guys in. There are still guys who would be able to help them at those two spots. But right now, when you're looking at running back and receiver, they're counting on number one health and undrafted free agents to help them out at those spots, right? That's what they're doing.
I thought they would sign a veteran as the third back. Then I thought, no, they'll draft one low, a guy who's a really good receiver. And they've got 2 undrafted guys, but like you can't count on them. So unless they saw like somebody like Buddy Howell, who made it because of special teams last year and plays running back, but so it wouldn't surprise me if they don't sign one. Then for the right wide receiver, I wrote a thing today that'll be on Texas Sports Nation this morning about Adai and also Johnny Dixon, a veteran free agent and an undrafted free agent. Dixon, who had 17 touchdown catches over the last 2 years, had 60 catches, 17 touchdowns, 18.2 yard average per catch, and then his touchdowns in his junior year, he had 18 catches, 8 touchdowns, and averaged 32 yards a catch. So they paid him extra money to get him to come here. His agent obviously sees a good opportunity for him, so I can't wait to see Johnny Dixon. Can he get that fourth spot, or is it Vincent Smith or Jester Weah, who was on the practice squad last year, or are they going to sign another veteran?
How are you buying? This is what I don't get. Last year they trusted in Deontay Foreman and Alfred Blue and seemed to be A-okay with that. And I've got 2 issues with that. One was that they trusted in Alfred Blue. 2 is that they trusted in Deontay Foreman, who's coming off of Achilles tendon. Are you nervous at all that they're continuing to trust in Deontay Foreman without having actually seen anything since the promising stuff we saw before he tore his Achilles? Like, it seems like they're putting a whole lot of faith in Deontay Foreman.
It sure does. And whatever he did in the offseason to get ready for the offseason program, he showed up in great shape. And he convinced them, you know, their problem wasn't his Achilles. Their problem was him being in good physical condition. And he's showed up, he'd been putting out videos of him working out on Instagram. And then when he got over there, he was in good enough shape to convince them they did not have to use a draft choice on a third running back. But I think that is a fluid position because behind Lamar Miller, you're going to have somebody. He missed 2.5 games last year. And odds are he'll miss a game or two this year. And Foreman or an undrafted free agent or a veteran who's still out there, they're going to have to take up the slack. And there's still a lot of veterans now that the data is surpassed for requiring compensatory picks. There's going to be another wave of free agency all over the NFL.
I'm just surprised that they have not added one running back or one wide receiver of note so far. I do like Caron Higdon from Michigan. That's the guy that you'll be able to see, John, on Friday at the rookie minicamp. And he is definitely an O'Brien-style running back. He's tough. He doesn't fumble the football. He runs hard inside. He's got a little bit of quickness. He breaks tackles. But, again, he's an undrafted free agent. And in the NFL, that third running back spot is one that is Mark, obviously used.
You're not allowed to talk about free agent undrafted running backs without mentioning Arian Foster.
Yes.
Because there's going to be somebody, if I check our text line right now, somebody's going to remind you, hey, hey, Arian Foster. Because Arian Foster was so awesome, you're supposed to believe that every single undrafted rookie free agent is going to be Arian Foster.
Well,
or you don't know your history.
Well, having watched both guys, I will tell you, while I like Caron Higdon, he is no Arian Foster.
You don't know your history.
Why did he not get drafted? That's a good question. I would have thought that he would have been about a four. If you would ask me in January, I would say that Caron Higdon should have been like a fourth or fifth round pick.
Can he catch? Because they need that third guy to be a good receiver.
I don't know how to answer that because Michigan didn't really throw him the ball. So, and that's the same thing with the other guy that Texas brought in, DeMarie Crockett. So I think he might be able to, but it wasn't really obvious in Jim Harbaugh's offense.